I'm not quite sure how long ago it was, but Guru Deva participated in the Martin Luther King holiday, Martin Luther King Day event in Hawaii, and there's a new one coming up, and so they've invited me, and so I was giving some thought. You know, I've never been to a Martin Luther King Day event, and may have to speak. And so starting to think about it and doing a little research. So I thought I'd share some of my preliminary thoughts. So Dr. King first encountered the teachings of Gandhi when he went to the theological seminary and was quite impressed, and then he even went to India, spent 5 weeks in India. I didn't realize that. In 1959, as a guest of the Prime Minister Nehru, in efforts to study and learn more about Gandhi's philosophy and techniques of nonviolence. On the India trip, King met with followers of Gandhi. During these discussions, he became more convinced than ever that nonviolent resistance was the most potent weapon available to oppressed people in their struggle for freedom. So, of course, we're all familiar with that general idea that Gandhi's principle of nonviolence, of course, is talking about nonviolence in a political setting, something we're not encountering today. We generally think of nonviolence or ahimsa just in the sense of a principle that we apply in our personal life, but it was taken up as a way of resisting, in other words, as an alternative to a violent form of resistance for an oppressed group, a nonviolent form of resistance. So, as we all know, Dr. King's efforts and helped change the situation in this country, and discrimination laws that existed in the southern states aren't there anymore. And in fact, there's anti-discrimination laws throughout the U.S. regarding housing and equal employment at this time. But of course, it didn't eliminate discriminatory attitudes. The laws are gone, the laws against discrimination, but the attitudes of discrimination, of course, are still present in the world today. They haven't gone away, as we know, and those attitudes are dislike, distrust, and even hate of others based on religion, ethnicity, or nationality. And of course, as we know, watching the news these days, America is certainly disliked by a lot of people around the world. And a strong sense of dislike and hate exists in many peoples toward America. And, of course, that's a form of discrimination. People are discriminating against people in America based upon their nationality without giving much thought to anything more than that. So in a minute, we'll look at a Hindu principle which can deal with that problem as effectively as the principle of nonviolence was used to overturn discrimination laws. There's a Hindu principle that can be used to overturn discriminatory attitudes. But first, I thought it was interesting in my research. This print is very small. That, as we all know, the United States is receiving lots of immigrants from many countries, and the state of California is the favorite place. So there was lots of information on the web that I could find in just a few minutes, because the problem of discrimination, just by having an increase in pluralism, tends to lessen. In other words, when you have two groups only, it's easy for them to build up these attitudes. When you have 10 groups, it gets harder. When you have 50 groups, the rules change. You just don't have the kind of standoffs that you have when there's just a couple of groups. So I thought it was interesting. In California, there's 32 countries immigrants are coming from. 32 different countries. And these immigrants are speaking 50 different languages. 50 different languages. Imagine dealing with that. So I just thought I'd read the top 10, if I can read the print here. Of course, the first one, as we would guess, is Mexico, speaking Spanish. The second one, Philippines. Tagalog is the name of the language. Third one, Vietnam. It's the third most country for immigrants into California, Vietnam, speaking Vietnamese. After that, the People's Republic of China, where we have Mandarin Chinese. Then we have Iran, speaking Farsi. Korea, speaking Korean. El Salvador, Spanish. Taiwan, Mandarin Chinese. And we get India. They list the languages Hindi, Bengali, Telugu, Marathi, Tamil, Urdu, Gujarati, Malayalam, Kannada, Oriya, Punjabi, Assamese, Kashmiri, and Sindhi. And 10th is Laos, speaking Laotian. So isn't that interesting? Such a diversity is coming into the country, and by itself helps reduce this problem of discrimination and dislike, because you get so many groups, you don't polarize or create strong feelings between just two or three groups. So, I'm sure you've all been asking yourself already, well, what is this other Hindu principle? So, as nonviolence was effective and as a form of protest against laws against discrimination, what is the Hindu principle which helps eliminate attitudes of discrimination? So it's the idea that everyone is divine. Every single person is a divine being. And that this divinity is not conditional, meaning it exists no matter what. No matter what religion they belong to, they're divine. No matter what beliefs they hold, they're still a divine being. No matter how they act, if they do the most violent actions, does that make them not divine? No. They're still divine. Every single being on the planet is a divine being. So this is a very interesting point of view, because not everyone thinks that way. But certainly, if you look at everyone as a divine being and really see the divinity in them, you can't discriminate against them. You're just seeing something spiritual in them. You have no ability to discriminate against something spiritual. So it's one of the big differences when we hear President Bush talk about evil. You know, that always kind of gets to me, and I think, what an interesting point of view, and how different from the Hindu point of view. You know, Saddam Hussein is this great evil. President Bush does not consider Saddam Hussein a divine being. He doesn't think of him as a spiritual being. He doesn't think that the essence of Saddam Hussein is the same as the essence of me. No, he doesn't think that way, right? So therefore, it's easy to dislike Saddam Hussein and feel that, well, he's not a divine being, therefore what we do to him is different than what we do to people that act in a good way. But of course, that's not the Hindu perspective. You know, the Hindu perspective is, just because you act in an evil way doesn't change the fact that you're a divine being. If you act in a good way, if you act in an evil way, if you're nonviolent, if you're violent, that's your actions. It's not who you are in your essence. Your essence is always divine, no matter what you do, no matter what you believe. So isn't that a wonderful point of view? It's a great point of view to help eliminate discrimination. Because from that point of view, all you see is the divinity within everyone. So Gurudeva, of course, in working with the Vision Kauai group, stepped that principle down. He didn't say, well, Hindus believe in the divinity of all, and therefore, you know, this and that. No, of course, Gurudeva didn't reference Hindu scripture in working with the Vision Kauai group, but he referenced Hindu principles without calling them Hindu principles. So based upon this idea that each person is a divine person and therefore should be looked at with love and compassion, no matter what they do, no matter what ethnic group they're in, no matter what religion they are, he created the idea, one island, many peoples, all Kauaians, right? So it's saying the same thing, but in a secular way. One island, many peoples, all Kauaians. So it doesn't matter what ethnic group you're part of, doesn't matter what religion you're part of, we're all one group, we're all Kauaians, meaning we should treat each other, no matter what our ethnic group, no matter what our religion, in the same way. It doesn't matter. Everyone should be treated the same, with the same kindness and caring and helpful attitudes that we have toward anyone on the island. People we know on the island, we should have it toward people we don't know on the island, because they're all Kauaians. So, taking that step deeper, reading from Living with Shiva on Ahimsa, Gurudeva relates the two principles we're talking about. The principle of Ahimsa and the divinity of everyone in a very nice way. The rishis who revealed the principles of Dharma or divine law in Hindu scripture knew full well the potential for human suffering and the path which could avert it. To them, a one spiritual power flowed in and through all things in the universe, animate and inanimate, conferring existence by its presence. To them, life was a coherent process, leading all souls without exception to enlightenment. And no violence could be carried to the higher reaches of that ascent. These rishis were mystics whose revelation disclosed a cosmos in which all beings exist in interlaced dependence. The whole is contained in the part, and the part in the whole. Based on this cognition, they taught a philosophy of non-difference of self and other, asserting that, in the final analysis, we are not separate from the world and its manifest forms, nor from the divine which shines forth in all things, all beings, all peoples. From this understanding of oneness arose the philosophical basis for the practice of non-injury and Hinduism's ancient commitment to it. We all know that Hindus, who are one-sixth of the human race today, believe in the existence of God everywhere as an all-pervasive, self-effulgent energy and consciousness. This basic belief creates the attitude of sublime tolerance and acceptance toward others. Even tolerance is insufficient to describe the compassion and reverence the Hindu holds for the intrinsic sacredness within all things. Therefore, the actions of all Hindus are rendered benign or ahimsa. One would not want to hurt something which one revered. On the other hand, when the fundamentalists of any religion teach an unrelenting duality based on good and evil, man and nature, or God and devil, this creates friends and enemies. This belief is a sacrilege to Hindus because they know that the attitudes which are the byproduct are totally dualistic. And for good to triumph over that which is alien or evil, it must kill out that which is considered to be evil. The Hindus look at nothing as intrinsically evil, even Saddam Hussein. No, I just added that. Even Osama bin Laden. No, doesn't say that either. The Hindus look at nothing as intrinsically evil. To him, the ground is sacred. The sky is sacred. The sun is sacred. His wife is a goddess. Her husband is a god. Their children are devas. Their home is a shrine. Life is a pilgrimage to mukti, or liberation from rebirth, which once attained is the end to reincarnation in a physical body. When on a holy pilgrimage, one would not want to hurt anyone along the way, knowing full well the experiences on this path are of one's own creation, though may be acted out through others. So that's a wonderful tying together of the two principles. You know, we can't hurt that which we revere. We can't hurt something we look at as divine. And it even takes it to the point of oneness, which is the next step in the process. In other words, the way I initially presented it was separate. In other words, we see the divine in each person. We look deeply enough. We see the soul nature, one's intrinsic nature, which is divine. It's within everyone. But as Gurudeva points out in this writing, everyone really isn't separate. Separateness only exists in the lower states of mind. When we look at it from a deeper perspective, from an inner perspective, from a higher state of consciousness, we only see a one spiritual force, a one divinity. And this is recognized in Vedanta in a nice way. They have a tradition. You may have seen some letters from Vedanta Swamis one to another. And when they start the letter, they don't say, "Dear Swami so-and-so." They never say that, right? How do you start the letter? You say, "To mine own self, beloved Atman." You're addressing the letter to yourself. You don't acknowledge that there's a separate person in that way of starting a letter. To mine own self, beloved self, to the one Atman. So you don't recognize a separateness. So, of course, that's what the teaching is based upon in its essence, is that we aren't separate. So if we hurt another person, we're only hurting ourselves. And if we help another person, we're only helping ourselves. There's only one divinity that permeates us all, and that's a perspective that we can have when we go deeply enough within ourselves. It's not just a concept. It can be a perspective, an experience that we hold. When we look out at other people, we don't see them as separate from us. We feel we're a one being, a one spiritual being.